Good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. Well, today's July 1st, 182nd day of the year. 183 days remain to the end of the year. The war still goes on in Ukraine. Russia is determined to reestablish their empire with Putin as the czar. Our own illustrious leader, on a good day, can find where he's going. He was doing a news conference at NATO, and the reporter started asking him questions, and he said, "I'm out of here." Didn't want to answer. Well, on this day in 69, Tiberius Julius Alexander ordered his Roman legion in Alexandria to swear allegiance to Vespasian as emperor. 552, the Battle of Tagina. Byzantine forces under Narses defeat the Ostrogoths in Italy, and the Ostrogoth king Totila is mortally wounded. 1097, Battle of Dorylaeum. Crusaders led by Prince Bohemond of Taranto defeat a Seljuk army led by Sultan Kilij Arslan I. Just got an email wanting to know what the Visigoths were. They were a Roman-era Germanic people. They're the ones that finally raided Rome. 1431, the Battle of La Higuera takes place in Granada, leading to a modest advance of the Kingdom of Castile during the Reconquista. That's when they were taking Iberia back from the Muslims. 1520, Spanish conquistadors led by Hernan Cortes fight their way out of Tenochtitlan after nightfall. 1523, Jan van Essen and Hendrik Voss become the first Lutheran martyrs, burned at the stake by Roman Catholics. Something they didn't like? The stake. 1569, Union of Lublin, the Kingdom of Poland, and the Grand Duchy of Lithuania confirm a real union. United countries called the Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth a Republic of Both Nations. 1643, first meeting of the Westminster Assembly. A council of theologians and the members of Parliament of England appointed to restructure the Church of England at Westminster Abbey in London. The theologians were called the Divines because God blessed them. 1690, War of the Grand Alliance. Marshal de Luxembourg triumphs over an Anglo-Dutch army at the Battle of Fleurus. 1690, Glorious Revolution. Battle of the Boyne in Ireland. 1766, Francois Jean de La Barre, a young French nobleman, is tortured and beheaded before his body is burned on a pyre, along with a copy of Voltaire's Dictionnaire Philosophique, nailed to his torso for the crime of not saluting a Roman Catholic religious procession in Abbeville, France. They took their religion seriously. 1770, Lexell's comet, I can't read today. It seemed closer to the Earth than any other comet in recorded history. Approached to a distance of 0.0146 astronomical units. That's about 1.3 million miles. 1782, raid on Lunenburg. American privateers attacked the British settlement of Lunenburg, Nova Scotia. 1819, Johann Georg Tralles discovers the Great Comet of 1819. The first comet analyzed using polarimetry by Francois Arago. 1837, a system of civil registration of births, marriages, and deaths is established in England and Wales. 1855, signing of the Quinault Treaty. The Quinault and the Quileute cede their land to the U.S. They were two Native American tribes, by the way. 1858, joint reading of Charles Darwin and Alfred Russel Wallace's papers on evolution to the Linnean Society of London. 1862, the Russian State Library is founded as the Library of the Moscow Public Museum. 1862 also saw Prince Alice of the U.K., second daughter Queen Victoria, marrying Prince Louis of Hesse, the future Louis IV, Grand Duke of Hesse. 1862, American Civil War. Battle of Malvern Hill takes place. the last of the 7 days' battles, part of George McClellan's Peninsula Campaign. He was a brilliant trainer, not much of a field commander. 1863, Kitty Cotty, Emancipation Day in Suriname, marking the abolition of slavery by the Netherlands. 1863, American Civil War. The Battle of Gettysburg begins on this date. That was a... Had the South won the Battle of Gettysburg, they would probably have conquered the North, because this was part of Lee's invasion. 1867. The British North American Act takes place as the province of Canada, New Brunswick, and Nova Scotia join into Confederation to create the modern nation of Canada. John Macdonald sworn in as the first Prime Minister of Canada. The date's commemorated annually in Canada as Canada Day, and it's a national holiday. Of course, Trudeau is unhappy it's not Trudeau Day. 1870, the United States Department of Justice formally comes into existence. Now that is a misnomer of a name. 1873, Prince Edward Island joins into Canadian Confederation. 1874, the Shoals and Glidden typewriter, first commercially successful typewriter, goes on sale on this date. 1878, Canada joins the Universal Postal Union. 1879, Charles Taze Russell publishes the first edition of the religious magazine, The Watchtower. And it's still annoying us to this day. 1881, the world's first international telephone calls made between St. Stephen, New Brunswick, Canada, and Calais, Maine, in the United States. 1881, General Order 70, the culmination of the Cardwell and Childers reforms of the British Army, comes into effect. 1885, the U.S. terminates reciprocity and fishery agreements with Canada. 1885, the Congo Free States established by King Leopold II of Belgium. 1890, Canada and Bermuda are linked by telegraph cable. 1898, Spanish-American War. Battle of San Juan Hill is fought in Santiago de Cuba, and of course the country of Cuba. 1901, French government enacts an anti-clerical legislation law of association prohibiting the formation of new monastic orders without government approval. 1903, started the first Tour de France bicycle race. 1908, SOS is adopted as international distress signal. 1911, Germany dispatches the gunship SMS Panther to Morocco, sparking the Agadir crisis. 1915, Lieutenant Kurt Wingen of the then-named German Deutsche Heeresflugzeugtruppe Army Air Service achieves the first known aerial victory with a synchronized machine gun armed fighter plane, the Fokker M.5K Eindecker. 1916, World War I. First day on the Somme. It's the first day of the Battle of the Somme. 19,000 soldiers of the British Army are killed and 40,000 are wounded. 1917, Chinese General Zhang Zun seizes control of Beijing and restores the monarchy, installing Puyi, last emperor of the Qing Dynasty, to the throne. That restoration was reversed just 2 weeks later when Republican troops regained control of the capital. 1921, Chinese Communist Party is founded by Chen Duxiu and Li Dazhou with the help of the Far Eastern Bureau of the Russian Social Democratic Labor Party, also known as the Bolsheviks, who seized power in Russia after the 1917 October Revolution, and the Far Eastern Secretariat of the Communist International. 1922, the Great Railroad Strike of 1922 begins in the U.S. 1923, the Parliament of Canada suspends all Chinese immigration. 1931, United Airlines began service. It was called Boeing Air Transport initially. 1931. Wiley Post and Harold Gaddy become the first people to circumnavigate the globe in a single-engine monoplane aircraft. 1932, Australia's national broadcaster, the Australian Broadcasting Corporation, was formed. 1935, on this date, Regina Saskatchewan Police and the Royal Canadian Mounted Police ambush strikers participate in the On to Ottawa Trek. 1942, World War II, First Battle of El Alamein. Also in 1942, the Australian federal government becomes the sole collector of income tax in Australia, as state income tax is abolished. That was a good day. 1943, the city of Tokyo and the prefecture of Tokyo are both replaced by the Tokyo metropolis. 1946, Crossroads Abel is the first post-war nuclear weapons test. 1947, the Philippine Air Force is established. 1948, Muhammad al-Jinnah inaugurates Pakistan's central bank, the State Bank of Pakistan. 1949, the merger of two princely states of India, Cochin and Travancore, into the state of Tiru-Kochi, later reorganized as Kerala, and the Indian Union ends more than 1,000 years of princely rule by the Cochin royal family. 1957, International Geophysical Year begins. 1958, Canadian Broadcasting Corporation links television broadcasting across Canada via microwave. 1959, flooding of Canada's St. Lawrence Seaway begins. 1959, specific values for international yard, avoirdupois pound, and the derived units, inch, mile, and ounce, are adopted after agreement between the U.S., the U.K., and other Commonwealth countries. 1960, the Trust Territory of Somaliland, that's the former Italian Somaliland, gains its independence from Italy. Currently, it unites its schedule with the five-day-old state of Somaliland, that's the former British Somaliland, to form the Somali Republic. 1960, Ghana becomes a republic, and Kwame Nkrumah becomes its first president. Queen Elizabeth II ceases to be its head of state. 1962, independence of Rwanda and Burundi. 1963, zip codes introduced into the U.S. mail. 1963, the British government admits the former diplomat Kim Philby had worked as a Soviet agent. They could never prove it. They knew it, but they couldn't prove it. 1966, the first color of a television transmission in Canada takes place in Toronto. 1967, the merger treaty. European communities formally created out of a merger with the common market, the European Coal and Steel Community, and the European Atomic Energy Commission. 1968, the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency's Phoenix program is officially established. Now, for those that are not really familiar with the Phoenix program, it was designed and originally coordinated by the U.S. CIA during the Vietnam War involving the American, Australian, and South Vietnamese militaries. In 1969, CIA responsibility is phased out and the program is put under the authority of Civil Operations Revolutionary Development Support. The program, which lasted from 67 to 72, was designed to identify and destroy the Viet Cong via infiltration, torture, capture, counterterrorism, interrogation, and assassination. CIA described it as a set of programs that sought to attack and destroy the political infrastructure of the Viet Cong. Phoenix program was premised on the idea that North Vietnamese infiltration had required local support within non-combat civilian populations. They were referred to as the VC infrastructure and political branch that had purportedly coordinated the insurgency. Throughout the program, Phoenix, to use their phrase, neutralized 81,740 people suspected of VC membership, of whom 26,369 were killed and the rest surrendered or were captured. 87 of those killed were attributed to conventional military operations by South Vietnamese and American forces, and the remainder were assassinated. It's nice they admitted somebody got assassinated. Alrighty. 1968. The Treaty on the Non-Proliferation of Nuclear Weapons is signed in Washington, D.C., London, and Moscow by 62 countries. 1968 saw the formal separation of the United Auto Workers from the AFL-CIO in the U.S. 1972, the first gay pride march in England takes place. I'm curious. Everybody's falling over themselves to support the gay pride movement. How about the heterosexual movement? Where's our parade? Now, such things are not discussed by our betters in Congress, the so-called squad that is doing their best to disrupt the country. 1976, Portugal grants autonomy to the Madeira. 1978, the Northern Territory of Australia is granted self-government. 1979, Sony introduces the Walkman. 1980, Old Canada officially becomes the national anthem of Canada. 1983, a North Korean Ilyushin 262M jet en route to Conakry Airport in Guinea crashes into the Fouta d'Ajalon Mountains in Guinea-Bissau. All 23 on board are killed, as far as we know. 1984, the PG-13 rating is introduced by the MPAA. 1987, American radio station WFAN in New York City is launched as the world's first all-sports radio station. 1990, German reunification. East Germany accepts the Deutschmark as its currency, thus uniting the economies of East and West Germany. 1991, the Cold War. Warsaw Pact is officially dissolved in a meeting in Prague. 1997, China resumes sovereignty over the city-state of Hong Kong, ending 156 years of British rule. The handover ceremony is attended by British Prime Minister Tony Blair, Charles, Prince of Wales, Chinese President Xi Jinping, and Secretary of State Madeleine Albright. 1999, Scottish Parliament is officially opened by Elizabeth II on the day that legislative powers are officially transferred from the old Scottish office in London to the new devolved Scottish Executive in Edinburgh. In Wales, the powers of the Welsh Secretary transfer to the National Assembly. 2002, the International Criminal Court is established to prosecute individuals for genocide, crimes against humanity, war crimes, and crimes of aggression. 2002, the Bashkirian Airlines flight 2937 to Tupolev Tu-154 and DHL flight 611, a Boeing 757, collide in mid-air over Überlingen, southern Germany. All 71 people on both planes are killed. 2003, over 500,000 people protest against effort to pass anti-sedition legislation in Hong Kong. 2004, Saturn orbit insertion of Cassini-Huygens begins at 1:12 UTC and ends at 2:48 UTC. 2006, the first operation of Qinghai-Tibet Railway is conducted in China. 2007, smoking in England is banned in all public indoor spaces. 2008, riots erupt in Mongolia in response to allegations of fraud surrounding the 2008 legislative elections. 2013, Croatia becomes the 28th member of the European Union. 2020, the United States-Mexico-Canada agreement replaces NAFTA. And NAFTA was one of the best shaft jobs of American workers I've ever seen. Okay. We've got a lot of births and deaths on this date in history. However, holidays and observances. Christian feast day, Aaron in the Syriac Church, Syriac Christianity Church. Blessed Antonio Rosmini Serbati, Felix of Como, Junipero Serra, Julius and Aaron, Leonidas of Alton, Servanus, Veep. Feast of the Most Precious Blood of Our Lord Jesus Christ, which was removed from the official Roman Catholic calendar since 1969. Earliest day on which Alexanderson Day can fall, celebrated on a Sunday closest to July 2nd in Sweden. Earliest day on which Caricom Day can fall, celebrated on the first Monday of July in Ghana. Earliest day on which Constitution Day can fall, celebrated on the first Monday of July in the Cayman Islands. Earliest day on which Dia del Amigo can fall, celebrated on the first Saturday of July in Peru. Earliest day in which Fisherman's Holiday can fall, celebrated on the first Friday of July in the Marshall Islands. Earliest day in which Heroes Day can fall, celebrated on the first Monday of July in Zambia. Earliest day in which International Cooperative Day can fall, celebrated on the first Saturday of July. Earliest day in which International Free Hugs Day can fall, celebrated on the first Saturday of July. Earliest day on which Navy Day can fall, celebrated on the first Sunday of July in Ukraine. Earliest day on which Navy Day can fall, celebrated on the first Saturday and Sunday of July in the Netherlands. Earliest day on which Youth Day can fall, celebrated on the first Sunday of July in Singapore. Also, it's Armed Forces Day in Singapore, Bobby Bahia Day in United States. Canada Day, formerly Dominion Day in Canada. Children's Day in Pakistan. Chinese Communist Party Founding Day in China. Day of Officials and Civil Service in Hungary. Doctor's Day in India. Emancipation Day in the Sirit Martin and St. Eustace. Engineers Day in Bahrain in Mexico. Hong Kong Special Administrative Region Establishment Day in Hong Kong and China. Independence Day in Burundi, celebrates independence of Burundi from Belgium in 1962. Independence Day in Rwanda, Independence Day in Somalia, International Tartan Day. July morning in Bulgaria, Keti Koti in Suriname, that's Emancipation Day. Madeira Day in Madeira in Portugal. Moving Day in Quebec, Canada. Newfoundland Day and Labrador Memorial Day. Republic Day in Ghana, Seretse Khama Day in Botswana, Territory Day in the British Virgin Islands, and the first day of Van Mohatsav is celebrated until July 7th in India. Man, that's a lot of holidays and observances. Okay. Alrighty. 69 AD, Batavian nobleman Gaius Julius Civilis proclaimed emperor of Syria. Also in 69 on this date, Roman general Vespasian is first proclaimed emperor by troops in Egypt. That's during the year of the four emperors. In the year 70, Roman general Titus and his forces set up battering rams to assault the walls of Jerusalem. Titus also became Roman emperor. 251, the Battle of Abritus in the Balkans, won by the Goths against the Romans. Roman emperors Diocletian and Herennius Etruscus are killed. 649, Pope Maurentius I elected to see Theodore I. In the year 1200 on this date, in China, sunglasses are invented. 1233, Earl Otto II van Geary grants Arnheim state justice. King Alfonso X, also known as the Wise, King of Castile and Leon, is crowned. 1347, engagement of Count Louis of Mayo to Margarita, daughter of Jan III. I think that's supposed to be Molly and not Mayo. Can't read my own handwriting. 1390, French and Guinness Armada sails out against barbarian pirates. 1517, the first burning of Protestants at the stake in the Netherlands. 1517, Inquisitor Adrian Poyens, Pope Adrianus VI, becomes cardinal. 1535, Sir Thomas More goes on trial in England, charged with treason. 1543, England and Scotland signed the Peace Treaty of Greenwich. 1569, the Latvian Parliament accepts the Union of Lublin and becomes incorporated into Poland. 1690, the army of Protestant King William III defeats the deposed Roman Catholic King James II in the Battle of Boyne in Ireland. 1690, the Congregation of Notre Dame of Montreal is founded by Marguerite Bourgeois, canonically constituted a community on this date. She's the first Canadian saint. 1747, the Battle of La Ville. French forces beat the British and the Dutch army in Belgium during the Austrian War of Succession. 1795, John Rutledge becomes the second Chief Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court. 1798, on this date, Napoleon's fleet reaches Alexandria, Egypt. 1810, Louis Napoleon abdicates as the King of the Netherlands. 1816, the French frigate Medusa is wrecked. It's the basis of Jenicott's painting, Raft of the Medusa. 1823, the United Provinces of Central America gain independence from Mexico. 1831, Admiral James C. Ross reaches the magnetic North Pole. 1836, on this date, President Andrew Jackson announces to Congress a request by James Smithson of 100,000 gold sovereigns to found an institution in Washington, D.C. that became known as Smithsonian Institute. He never set foot in it, by the way. 1839, Abdulmadid succeeds Mahmud II as Sultan of Turkey. 1847, the first U.S. postage stamps go on sale. 5 cent Franklin and 10 cent Washington, New York City. Happens in New York City. In 1850, on this date, at least 626 ships lie at anchor around San Francisco Bay. No commerce was moving. 1858, the first Canadian coins are minted, the 1, 5, 10, and 20 cent coins. 1859, a balloon covers a record 809 miles over St. Louis. 1861, the first public schoolhouse opens at Washington and Mason Street in San Francisco. 1861, the U.S. War Department decrees that Kansas and Tennessee to be canvassed for volunteers. 1862, Alexander II of Russia grants Jews the right to publish books. Also in 1862, the U.S. Internal Revenue Law imposes its first federal taxes on inheritance, tobacco, and incomes over $600. Now I'm sure the Democrats were just beside themselves with excitement. More money we can spend. 1863, the free city delivery of mail begins in 49 U.S. cities. Postage is 3 cents per ounce. 1All right, we have ended our little history segment. You know, we've been talking about creatures in the night for some time now. And I've got some more stories about strange things that wander in the night. Yeah, let's see. You know, there's an entire field of science. It's not recognized by most scientists to study unknown creatures. It's called cryptozoology. And got a story from a young man named Nicholas. Said he was a teenager. He used to sit out at the park and little town he was in. Fair Oak, Indiana. Has a small neighborhood, maybe 100 people. They were sitting on a bench in a pavilion area of the park when they heard a baby crying. And this was about midnight. So the likelihood of somebody being out with their baby was slim and none. And usually, babies don't go for walks by themselves. And it just rained that night, so footprints could be found in the mud. So they kept hearing this baby crying, so they decided to go check it out. Now, in hindsight, if you hear babies crying in the woods, don't go, because you're not going to like what you find. So they walked through the mud and the brush, and they can see rabbit and deer prints, you know, the normal stuff you find in the woods in Indiana. And then they heard some weird or low growling noise and some crunching sound just ahead of them. Well, normally at that point, folks would stop and reconsider, but they didn't. They kept pushing ahead, and then noticed some strange prints in the mud that looked like hooves. Well, Nicholas's friends decided they wanted to turn back, and he's determined he's going to go forward, so they walked a little more. And all of a sudden, they heard the crunching noise getting louder. Now, his friends were backing up at that point, except for one of his friend's sister, who was still close to Nicholas's side. Then they heard his growl, and everybody behind him took off running. But he and the sister were almost paralyzed in fear. About 50 yards ahead, they could make out a creature eating a deer carcass. And the sister started to scream, but he put his hand over her mouth and told her to back up slowly. Creature never seemed to notice him. Now, he didn't know what it was, but it was tall and looked like he was wearing an animal skull, and most definitely something out of a horror story. Now, Nicholas was Native American, so he had some knowledge of what this creature was. But he was terrified for his life. And he was curious as to whether or not it lived in that area, but he wasn't going to go ask it. Now, in the Native American culture, even discussing these creatures can bring them. So he didn't discuss what it was with his friends, even though he was pretty sure he knew. Now, we got another story by Joshua. He's 8 or 9, lying in bed. Kept hearing something outside his window. Sounded like it was growling and scratching. And after a while, he got the nerve to look out his window, and he saw something that still haunts him to this day. And he's up in his 30s. Has no idea what he saw. When he looked out his window, there was a large dog-like creature with glowing red eyes with its front paws on the window, and it was staring at him. Now, he was terrified. He screamed, ran into his parents' room. His father went to look. Didn't find anything. Didn't see any evidence anything had been there. Both his parents told him he had to have been dreaming, but he knew it wasn't a dream. Went to look out his window the next day, and on the windowsill, there was the biggest paw print he'd ever seen burned into the wood. Again, he went to get his parents to show it to him. But when they got back, the paw prints were gone. Saw it a few more times in his teens, always at a distance. So the question becomes, what was it and why had it singled him out? Well, in spite of all the poo-pooing that the so-called wise heads indulge in when something like this happens, there's a lot of evidence that there are strange creatures in the night. Got another story happened at 4 a.m. guy got off the night shift, was driving home. And he got to a turn and headlights illuminated a figure. Figured 15, 20 yards away. And the driver immediately knew that what it was not a man in a suit. Now, up until this point in time, he never even considered the possibility that Bigfoot was true. Slowed down, rolled the window down about halfway so he could see it clearly. About 7.5 feet tall. Hair was about 6 inches long and dark reddish brown. Had big, deep-set eyes. Heavy brow. Protruding mouth. Nose somewhere between an ape and a man. And it was massive. When he got to the creature, it froze in a... was stepping across the ditch. Right arm swinging back, left leg in a forward position, and it was looking right at him. Done to call any eye shine, because if it's an animal, the eyes are going to shine. If it's human, it's not. Couldn't hear anything in the way of noise. I mean, he was just almost coasting down the road while looking at this creature. It froze, apparently in the hope that it wasn't seen. He was standing directly in front of a power pole, and his thighs were about as wide as the pole, and he had just reached the top of a nail sign on the pole. First few moments, and wrecked his car right in that same ditch. Well, now I might mention at this point the individual that told this story was a female. And later when she went back with a boyfriend to kind of relive the event, and the creature's head had come up to a sign that was nailed to the power pole, and her boyfriend was 6'2", and his head was 3 feet below the sign. So the creature was about 9 feet tall. Well, there are many, many stories of Bigfoot, and certainly there was no question that there we go. Got a report from a young lady named Ursula. She was Swiss, moved to the U.S. with her parents when she was 8. Lived in Asheville, North Carolina for about the first 4 years in this country. And since it was summertime when they got there, her father immediately sent her to camp, help her acclimate to the state and make new friends. And it was just a day camp. Got there about 9 in the morning, got picked up about 3 in the afternoon. And the counselors took the kids on local field trips, which her father thought was a great thing. Now, Asheville is beside the Smoky Mountains, so it was a perfect place to spend a summer. But if you regularly enjoy the outside, there's always the possibility of running into some not-so-great creatures. Now, it was further into the summer, the kids were taken on a field trip involving a day hike through an impressive patch of woods. And Ursula was certainly impressed by how tall the trees were. But she remembers walking by one or two campgrounds that made her eager to ask her father to buy a tent so they could go camping. After lunch, she and some friends explored the area and found a gully with a couple of wooden bridges. She and the other three kids ran back and forth on one of the bridges. One of the children suddenly screamed. A hand reached up from beneath the bridge and tripped the little boy, causing him to fall forward. But the strangest part of it, according to Ursula, was that the arm, it wasn't human. It had gangly fingers with long yellowish nails connected to very dark arms. Even a little bit of green. That's how she remembers it. The little boy shook his leg, trying to free it from the creature's grasp, screaming the whole time. The scene caused a few of the other kids to freeze up out of fear. Ursula was the only one with the self-control to run for help, and she crossed paths with a couple of counselors already running toward the commotion. They ran by her so quickly, she didn't have a chance to tell them what had happened. The screams had become tears by the time she got back there, and one of the counselors was carrying the little boy over his shoulder. And his lower leg and white sock were soaked with blood, but his attacker was no longer present. Now, from the discussions, it was clear to Ursula that the counselors hadn't seen that creepy-looking hand that caused the boy to fall. And they were much more concerned about getting the kid's wound sanitized and soon be tripped on his own. She remembered the other kids trying to tell the counselors what they'd seen, but their words just weren't getting through. Now, she has no idea what that thing was, but what if it was responsible for inspiring the folklore of bridge trolls? Now, she was terrified at the time, but now she'd give almost anything to get a good look at whatever it was underneath the bridge. Now, she thinks the whole idea of something living under a bridge is kind of far-fetched, and likely a mere coincidence the creature was under the bridge at that time. But the question still is, what was it? And what would have happened if the little boy had been by himself when he ran across the bridge that day? She thought maybe what was under the bridge was just irritated by the racket and wanted to scare everybody away. But what's interesting is it appears it was willing to take a life in order to do it, and might even have looked at the little boy's prey. Now, this next story comes from Roswell, New Mexico. That's where the UFO crash was said to have happened. I used to speak there every 4th of July, but I became persona non grata when Don Smith, who thinks himself the greatest thing in the world in regard to UFOs, gained control of the board. I wasn't wanted because my books outsell his 4-1. Well, growing up in Roswell, according to this next narrator, you can't help but hear all sorts of extraterrestrial stories. But this particular individual encountered alien life for the first time when they were 16. And she began to feel hostility toward a large part of the UFO industry. Suddenly, she couldn't help but hate her hometown cheesy presentation they used to attract tourists. When beings of higher intelligence visit you, it feels like anything other than something of a joke. Absolutely nobody could be mocked for sharing their encounter stories, or should be mocked. Both their parents lived in Roswell, but they divorced when the narrator was 11. And the narrator preferred to spend most of the time with the father because he didn't care for the mother's boyfriend. He was defined as a slime ball for reasons that Red didn't want to go on to. And the narrator and the father got along very well, but he had a bit of a problem with alcoholism. He'd often pass out while they're watching a game or a movie, and never a violent drunk, just a sleepy one. And it was probably mostly because the father would fall asleep on the couch in the evenings that the narrator got in the habit of going on night walks. His house was on a desert landscape, and even though he could see other homes in the area, they were all pretty far apart, which is typical of New Mexico and even Texas to a certain extent. It made his property feel very private. It was probably another one of the reasons the narrator preferred being there over where the mother lived. And wasn't really sure when noticed The dark tic-tac-shaped objects in the sky or the faint puncture marks in the skin, but it all happened about the same time. And it was maybe the most bizarre part of it, as the narrator seemed almost apathetic about what was happening. Well, the father asked the narrator about the strange marks. One was on the forearm. He was concerned, made him wonder if she might, the narrator might be injecting something to get high. One time, I remember lashing out at the father, stating it was one of the most ironic things ever that he, of all people, be quick to accuse somebody of having an addiction problem. Went so far as to tell him that his addiction is what invited her, the mother's obnoxious new boyfriend, into her narrator's life. It was a cold, callous thing to say, and even though it was true. But the forearm was where the marks were noticed for the first time. And they started showing up in various areas, such as the chest and the stomach and the back of the neck. Didn't really want to talk about those markings or even internally acknowledge it. Much of the time was still a bit of a mystery, a lot of lost time. Something didn't want the narrator to discuss what was going on. Eventually, falling into a routine, where the narrator would go on night walks and spot the shapes in the sky almost every time. Didn't think there was ever a time there were more than three of them. They always moved in a strange way, like they were in sync with each other, like they were engaged in an aerial dance. And there was a variety of occasions where the tic-tac-shaped crafts would just simply vanish before her, the narrator's eyes. Either they camouflaged themselves in the sky, sped away at a speed incomprehensible to the human eye, or maybe use some sort of interdimensional travel. No matter what the case was, the technology is far more advanced than anything available to the average individual. Aside from these walks and strange markings that appeared on the body, the narrator only had the vaguest images in head of beings whose silhouettes relate to the typical depiction of gray aliens. But the thing is, it can only remember the shapes, no recollection of facial features. Didn't even have a rough estimate of how tall or short they might have been. And it seemed like the emotions were somehow stabilized to prevent the narrator from resisting their agenda. Which, of course, brought up the possibility how many people on this planet have had similar experiences or feel inclined to keep it to themselves for reasons other than simply avoiding ridicule. Well, regardless of how or why these things are happening, society needs to probably accept this phenomena does occur. How many humans take such pleasures in mocking this stuff or turn it into a money-making proposition like the inimitable Don Smith? From Roswell, New Mexico, let's turn to Lake Champlain, known for hosting one of North America's most famous cryptids. And the narrator, in this particular instance, didn't believe it until saw it. You know, he's previously dismissed it as nothing more than an old wives' tale. And it's, frankly, the narrator thought it was healthy to approach things like this with an open mind. And it's been beneficial to recognize that not everybody who claims to encounter cryptids is looking to pull your leg. Now, in 2017, he and his wife and kids went on a summer vacation in New York. If you're not familiar with Lake Champlain, it spreads across New York, Vermont, and even a little bigger than Quebec. It's a massive body of water, one of the biggest of after the five Great Lakes. They rented a cabin for a week that had a beautiful, lush lawn leading all the way up to the shore. Perfect place to create some wholesome family memories. Narrator had two boys, Cole and Cameron, who were obsessed with the old canoe that came with the rental. They wanted to use it constantly, but being 5 and 7, a little too young for them to take it out on their own. So the father had to do a little bit more rowing than he signed up to do. But he got exercise, plus he loved seeing his boys so happy. And he knew he was going to instill the affection for the great outdoors to one day pass on to their children. But there was this one particular day when they came across an animal that made the narrator feel for their lives. It was in the evening, somewhere around 7. Cole and Cameron demanded to take the canoe out right after, before dinner. Now, they'd gone for ice cream early in the afternoon, so the narrator was keen to burn off some of those calories. The wife encouraged him to go, claiming she and daughter, Amanda, were going to have dinner ready by the time they got back. And it was an overcast day, making sundown feel a lot closer than it was. And it certainly gave the lake an eerie appearance. The narrator was sure it was partially due to the lack of vessels out on the water, maybe because most people anticipated rain. Their family trio was amid observing a flock of ducks when the youngest boy tugged on the father's t-shirt and called out the word shark. Now, the narrator was knew there was no sharks in Lake Champlain, but he was immediately thrown up on what his son had spotted. First glance, the dark shape did kind of resemble a dorsal fin. Wasn't nearly as prominent as what you'd expect to see with a shark, but the narrator was having a lot of trouble attributing it to any aquatic life he knew about. And soon it became apparent it was approaching the unsuspecting birds. Gonna surprise them for a late afternoon snack. When the approach animal was somewhere between 5 and 10 yards away, one of the ducks took notice and took off into the air. And without hesitation, the other birds followed. And then that's when they realized it was no dorsal fin they were looking at. It was the head of something that they still couldn't identify. And even though they got just a glimpse of the thing before the thing went underwater, they saw maybe a foot of what was either a serpent-like body or a very long neck. There was something very fluid about its movement as the head slightly rose before submerging, indicating this thing was, whatever it might have been, was more than comfortable in deep water. Well, the older boy asked his father what it was, and both the boys were as excited as he had ever seen them. But the father's eyes were still scanning the area, hoping the animal might again reveal itself when Cameron demanded his attention. Well, both boys eventually started yelling, "Dad, Dad, look!" He turned, and there it was. Looked like a giant black anaconda protruding at least 7 feet out of the water on the other side of the boat. This time it was closer, indicating it swam underneath them almost immediately after the ducks took off. If it hadn't been for the creature being at least 25 feet from the boat, it would have probably been panic. If it got any closer, father said later he didn't know what he would have done. Between grabbing his kids to shield them or using one of the paddles to try to fend the creature off, but the creature remained in place without any hint as to what it was thinking behind its stare. Eventually, he noticed what appeared to be a ridged back that helped to confirm this was no small-sized creature. And whatever it was, there's no question it was a dominant predator in that ecosystem. It was hard to imagine anything in an ocean posing a threat to this creature. And once he noticed the presence of a torso, everything about it reminded him of a plesiosaur. Maybe the creature is a rare descendant of that ancient species, akin to the theorized connection between Bigfoot and Gigantopithecus. Now, he didn't think this large creature got any closer to him before it veered to its right and re-submerged. They didn't see it after that, and the kids couldn't stop talking about it. For his part, the father found it challenging to even speak. His brain was trying to derive any possible means to justify that they had been pranked or at the very least misjudged what they saw. He distinctly remembered the trembling sensation in his arms when he paddled back to the pier. So paranoid that the creature was trying to was going to burst out any moment and snatch up one of the kids, but there was nowhere to take cover on that narrow, extremely exposed vessel. Even after they got back on land, he found himself wondering whether the predator could efficiently move about on the land. Did that mean the children were in danger while playing near the water? Well, as night came, he was able to calm his nerves with some rational thinking. If that creature was highly dangerous to humans, surely more locals would have provided warning. Well, that was the day that he discovered that the famous Lake Champlain monster known as Champ is very real. He thought it was remarkable. He thought he had learned the truth and nobody got hurt. Sometimes, when you least expect it, you get a dose of reality, which raises the question, how many other mythical creatures are actually real? Well, there's not enough time to start our next segment. So, on this note, I'm going to tell you goodbye until tomorrow, Monday at this time. This is Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show, having a truly great weekend.